Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to The Exchange. This is Cheryl Castile. First off, I want to say hats off to everyone regarding Festival Acadiens at Creole, everybody involved with the festival there, and also hats off to the staff here and some of the producers at KRVS who did a great job at telecasting. I don't know if that's the correct term, but is it, Cecil? I was going to say
broadcasting.
Yeah, it's not. I got stuck there for a minute. Broadcasting the festival. It's always such a nice little perk when you can't be there every minute, whether it be work or family obligations or you're on the way there. Wonderful. And a wonderful setup that KRVS had at festival there this year, too, and chance for some folks to do some interviews and everything. So good deal. And I just want to mention, too, we have with KRVS, we do start our annual fundraiser October 18th through the 27th. If you haven't renewed your membership, you can do that prior on the website at krvs.org. Also, I always recommend to people, if you haven't been to the station, the fundraising time is a great time to come in here and pledge your support. It's a beautiful, beautiful station, beautiful recording studios, and then it's a chance to meet some of the folks that work here. So that's October 18th through the 27th, and we'll talk a little bit about that later in the show too. My guest that I have in the studio today, I'm very excited because besides being a very, very talented musician, he's just one of the best human beings that I know. So
I was going to say the same thing about you.
How's that? Okay, then we'll exchange the $20 at the end.
Right.
So my guest today in the studio is Glenn Fields. And a lot of people in this area, I think, including me, got to know about Glenn when he was with the band the Red Stick Ramblers, now on with the band the Revelers, and has sat in and done a lot of special projects with so many different people, but also one of the founders of the Black Pot Festival that's also coming up. So welcome, Glenn.
Thanks, Cheryl. Thanks for having me. Yeah. I seriously was driving my car yesterday thinking about this show, and I was going to open it with, I'm so happy to be here. You're one of my favorite people ever.
Okay, so right now we're just going to do a little schmooze fest thing between
just a little love fest here over the airwaves, yeah.
All right, yeah, that would kind of be boring. but, you know, Glenn, you know, seriously, I think a lot of people in this area, you know, besides close friends or other musicians, but folks got to be familiar with you throughout the Acadiana area and other parts of the state when you did get in with the Red Stick Ramblers, when that band came together. But life for you started back in Baton Rouge.
No, I did, yeah. I was born there in 1973.
Oh, my God, I was in college.
Well, you know.
I was in college listening to that Hocus Pocus. Yeah,
I was. That's exactly what I was going to say. Those were the days that those songs were playing on the radio.
Well, I don't mean to make
you
guys.
Or no, not college. Did I say college?
You did say
73?
College.
No, I was in high school.
Oh, there you go.
Let's not date myself.
Well, I was out of high school.
Yeah, no, I was in high school.
None
still.
Of us are getting younger.
Yeah.
If you do the math, I'll be 40 this year.
Okay. So, all right.
Anyway, I grew up in Baton Rouge. My family is from Crowley and from Morgan City.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. My parents were high school sweethearts. They met in the eighth grade.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that cute?
Yes, yeah. It is. Yeah, because you don't always get to hear stories like that anymore.
No. Yeah, they both went to Morgan City High and Junior High, and that's where they met. So.
Yeah. Well, growing up, was there music in the house? I'm curious when music got to be a part of who you are.
That's a good question. No one in my family really plays music. I have an uncle who played some saxophone and trombone at the college level. But my dad was an engineer for most of his life, always had a great stereo, you know, and he was always reading up on what the latest and greatest stuff was. So he had a nice turntable and half of a quadraphonic system. I don't know if anybody remember those out there. And some really nice Marantz speakers, and he loved to play music, and anytime I asked him to, he would, and so it was great. It was great. He bought me my first turntable at 9 years old.
Oh, very nice. Yeah. What kind of music was he listening to?
In my house on Saturday, after I got through cutting the grass, I'd come inside, and I kid you not, back to back to back, I think on Channel 9 in Baton Rouge, you could watch Hee Haw, American Bandstand, and Soul Train.
Wow, what a great, what a great combination
of everything.
All
three of
them
in a row.
Huh.
So my dad listened to all of that stuff.
Yeah.
And we had everything in the house from their records that they got in high school. You know, Janis Joplin and the Beatles and all this stuff,
yeah.
All the way to like Earth, Wind, and Fire. And you know, of course, it's the 80s, so you got to have like your Hall & Oates and, you know, the Toto and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I think he even had a
Hold the Line.
Yeah.
Toto.
A disco I remember a disco version of Set Me Free, Why Don't You, Babe? I don't know if you guys remember that.
It is. Set me free, why don't you?
Yeah. And it had like flamenco guitar, and I remember castanets and some – it was weird. But it was great.
Yeah.
I loved it. We turned the lights off and turned the radio up, and we had a great time.
Fun. So so what was your first instrument?
Well, I started playing drums. That was
drums
my first
instrument.
Yeah,
okay.
And I'm still playing the same chords on guitar I was in high school. So.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, I had a friend who needed $400 to buy an electric guitar. And this is back in the day when you could buy a 60s Les Paul for $400.
Yeah.
So he said, well, I have this drum set that you've been playing on over at my house. Why don't you just buy it from me? I'll sell it to you for $400. So I asked my parents if I could buy a drum set for $400. They said, absolutely not. So I had $400 in my savings account, which, you know, when you're 16 is a lot of money and burning a hole in your pocket. So I don't know how I got the money out of my savings account without my parents involved. But I did, and I gave it to him, and I had a drum set.
Yeah.
So
when you were over there and he said, you're always playing on my drum kit, just like fooling around, or were you guys actually?
Yeah, well, we didn't really have a band or anything, but I was really into Led Zeppelin when I was, you know, like 16, as most young guys were back then. And I sat down and just played The Ocean. Like, I'd never touched the drums before, but I just sat down and took to it. It was I don't know. It just felt easy and
comfortable.
Comfortable. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So that was it. The rest is history. I couldn't play.
Did you play in a band in high school? Like a school
band? I did.
Band?
I went to McKinley High School in Baton Rouge, and I'll try to keep this short. But I had art in seventh period, and I grew up in a family of really talented visual artists on my mom's side.
Ah.
So. I inherited some of that. I don't know. But somehow this guy, my art teacher, let me test out of the rest of the class. So I didn't have to be in the art class when everybody else was doing. I got my own studio, and I could do whatever I wanted to in that studio. So you know what I did? I skipped class, and I went over and played in the jazz band.
That's very cool.
I played drums with the saxophone. Well, actually, he was the music teacher there. His name was Johnny Cage. He played alto saxophone, and I don't know if he ever made any recordings, but he was great. I mean, when you're that age, he was, you know, he was an old guy from that neighborhood who grew up playing in the 50s and 60s, and you know, he was just, to me, he was a god.
Yeah,
you know, he knew everything.
That's right,
and could play everything. You know, so.
You know, I'm curious, before we talk more about the music, you mentioned your dad being an engineer. I know another thing you really like to do is you're into all the old cars.
Oh, yeah.
But like, actually tinkering with them working on them.
I do love to tinker with cars, yes.
Did that come from your dad? Or
yeah,
did
absolutely,
that come?
Absolutely.
I'm just thinking working with the hands and all that.
My first car was a 1976 Honda Accord hatchback, which was my mother's. My parents had worked out a deal with each other where they would each buy a new car. Well, they'd buy a new car every 4 years, but they traded. One time would be my dad, the next time would be my mother, the next time would be my dad. So we had every 4 years we had a new car. So back then, when that car was done, they parked it and said, well, this will be your car whenever you're ready to drive.
Yeah.
And so it sat for a while. And you know, back then, well, I guess still now, you can't leave a car sitting around. But this car had a carburetor, a little four-cylinder engine. And when it came time for me to do it, my dad said, okay, well, you can have this car, but you got to buy it. I'll sell it to you for $500. So I had to save up $500. I bought the car, and then it wouldn't start. And he said, okay, well, if you want to get it going, then you're going to have to figure out what's wrong with it and get it going.
But he taught you some good life.
Yeah, it was great.
You know?
It was great. he got me a carburetor rebuild kit, and I remember rebuilding the carburetor with him, and sure enough, that was it.
And that's how that started.
Yeah, it started right up, and I think we went through two head gaskets and another probably 150,000 miles in that car. It was,
yeah.
It was great. Great. I wish I had that car still.
Are you still putzing on cars? Or?
No, not so much. I had a Cadillac a few years ago, had to sell that to buy a little pickup truck to do some home improvement projects. And then recently I bought a little station wagon because I'm traveling around so much with the music.
Yeah.
And it makes it a little easier to.
But you're a good guy to have in the band in case something happens.
It's been fun. It's been a lot of fun. I remember one time driving to Austin, Texas with just me and Chaz Justice driving an old church van that we had, and the windshield wipers stopped working. So Chaz and I had the brilliant idea of pulling over because we were almost to Austin, and we were running late for a gig. So we pulled over, and we grabbed two of those squeegees from a gas station and taped them together with some duct tape. And Chaz would lean out the passenger side window and scrape the windshield while I drove.
That's teamwork, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Very good.
Yeah. I remember fixing.
It's nice you're here to tell the story.
Yeah. I'm sure Chaz will love that. I do remember fixing one of our vans with the little pop top from a soda can. The linkage in the windshield wipers broke, and there was a little rod that connected the two windshield wipers together. But then from where the motor was mounted to the rod, there was a little post that went through the rod. And then on the other end of that rod, there was a little – I don't know why they made out of plastic, but there was a plastic clip there. And of course, that plastic clip broke. And I happened to have a can of Red Bull or something in my hand, so I was like, wait a minute. I just broke the little tab off, and it fit perfectly. And I think it stayed on that – It stayed
very
on the van
good.
Till the very end. So, yeah.
So a good musician and a handy guy to have around.
I don't know. I hope so.
So there you go.
Thank you.
I think I just won something.
And that's actually... Maybe we could do a little giveaway for the Glenn. You can rent or you can have Glenn for one day to do some kind of little repair.
Yeah, I will. I'll fix your car with a ballpoint pen and a
kind of a MacGyver
yeah,
kind of guy.
A stick of gum.
A MacGyver guy of the highway.
Well, do what you got to do sometimes.
Yeah,
Cheryl.
There you go.
That's right.
So we'll get back to so you're back in Baton Rouge growing up.
Yep.
There was at that time when you were growing up, how was the music scene in Baton Rouge?
I loved it. I don't know what it's like now, but back then there was a pretty, still a pretty vibrant blues scene, and there were still some juke joints left. I used to go hang out at this place called the Neal Family Restaurant from time to time. North Baton Rouge. I don't think my parents knew where I was going, but it was...
Because you were in high school still?
Yeah, high school, late teens,
okay.
It was on North Acadian, in the seedy side of town, some might say. It was great. I went Christmas Day.
Was the Neal family?
Yeah, sorry. Rafael Neal and Kenny Neal and the whole family, which was kind of a Baton Rouge institution for quite a while there. My first experience in that we went in the night of Christmas Day one year, and I think I might have been 17, I don't know, 18.
Yeah.
And it was great. Just local folks in the neighborhood hanging out, all looking at us like we were crazy, but, it took 5 minutes and they were all buying us drinks.
It
was amazing.
Yeah.
So friendly and just a great time.
You remember who was playing there that night, the first time?
Yeah, I do, actually. It was James Johnson who recorded with Lazy Lester. He played guitar.
Yeah.
A lot of Rafael was playing. I can't remember who the rhythm section was right now, but I vividly remember James Johnson being dressed in a suit and playing a guitar solo with his right hand in his pocket of his pants. That was the coolest thing I had ever seen in my life. It was so great.
Yeah.
And then one year I saw James Cotton in that club. And
yeah.
It's probably a room that if you put if you put 30, 40 people in, it would be really crowded.
Yeah.
You know? So it was a nice small place, and everybody was really nice. I don't know what to say other than that. Yeah. It was a great
cool
experience.
Place. Is that the style of music that you were hearing there, is that kind of what was catching your ear at that time, or was there a variety?
I listened to everything. It was really not just one thing, but that was one of the few things that I could go see. I knew where to find it.
And
it felt like it was real. You know, I saw Johnny Taylor at a place called the Gold Coast Blues Club one time, and me and my friend Bennett were like the only white kids in the whole. I mean, it was just beautiful. And I didn't nobody I knew was listening to Johnny Taylor except for me and my friends, you know, and three other people, you know, but it was great. Yeah, it was just a lot of fun. It was a big part of my musical life. It turned me on.
At that time, were you in a band?
I was in a band with my friend Vic, another friend Gus, and after playing together for 5 years, we knew five songs because we would try and learn them note for note and just like obsess about everything.
You know?
So we never played out, never really played anywhere.
Yeah.
But we just practice a lot.
Do you remember, though, Glenn, back at that time, though, having the feeling of I want to pursue music? This is what I want to do?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think anyone really understood at that time what I was kind of going through in my brain, you know. But I don't even know if I did. I didn't really know you could pursue music as a career, really. But I just knew. I don't know if I – only way I can think about it is I was obsessed. I still am obsessed with music. You know, it's the last thing I think about at night. It's the first thing I think about in the morning. I can't help myself. I've tried to have day jobs. I've tried, you know, and I've tried to do other things. I was a draftsman for like 5 or 6 years for an engineering company that my dad worked for. And I would just sit and stare at my computer and listen to music all day.
Yeah.
And, you know, try to get the minimum amount of work done that I possibly could to keep from getting fired. Yeah.
But that's what goes through your brain.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much.
Is music.
I think with most musicians
that
I know are like that, especially around here.
It's, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Well, you brought in a cut. Of Rafael Neal.
Yeah.
And which one is it that you...
Change My Way of Living. This is off of a compilation CD on the Ace Records label called Lafayette Social, that Soul Show, that a friend of mine, Richard Grant, turned me on to, I guess, back in like maybe 95, 96. But this CD or this album goes with me everywhere I go.
Hmm.
I never leave the house with it, or without it, sorry.
Yeah.
And it's got so many great songs on it, but this is just one of them.
Very cool. All right.
I'm going to change my way of living. I do the thing that's right. I've been doing the wrong thing. Just about. I can't count the hearts I've broken. I can't count the lies I told. Oh, but lately, I've been thinking I've got to readjust what I see. That's why I'm gonna change my way of living. I'm gonna fall on my knees, praying every change my will.
All right. That was Rafael Neal. If you're just joining us, this is The Exchange. And my guest in the studio today is a musician and festival founder, organizer, Glenn Fields. We've been talking about Glenn growing up in the Baton Rouge area. How did the music from this area, which goes throughout the state, mm-hmm. but when you look at the Acadiana area, when did you get introduced to the music from this area?
Well, when I was younger in Baton Rouge, the radio stations are still there, but I don't think they're quite the same as they were when I was younger. KLSU played a big part in my musical development because late at night they would have shows like you guys have here at KRVS. This is one of the reasons I moved here is because of this radio station. But
very good.
Yeah. It back then, late at night, they would have the local DJ type shows, you know, where there would be a blues show one night of the week, there'd be a Cajun show one night of the week, there'd be, you know, soul music or experimental avant-garde stuff. I used to love listening to Dr. Demento every Sunday night on KLSU. Yeah. And then we had high school had they still had the AM station, but back then the AM station, I think it was KBRH, they would play nothing but 60s, I'm sorry, everything back from like the late 40s all the way through the 70s, soul and R&B. So those two stations, and this guy Rob Pear used to be the kind of the guy that would program that AM station. And he was kind of a little bit older than me. I always looked up to him for musical taste and everything. But on KLSU one night, I remember hearing Cajun music and didn't really know what it was. I mean, I asked my dad about it. You know, he told me a little bit, you know, what it was. But it was I vividly remember later I found out what the song was, but it was the Cajun Fugitive, it was a Belton Richard song. Okay. He's just doing a French version of a country song, but
sure.
To me it was so exotic, you know. I'd never heard anything like that before, so that was the first Cajun tune I'd ever heard. But then later on I met Joel Savoy and Lindsay Young living around LSU. I used to live right outside of campus in kind of the student ghettos, if you will. And Joel lived down the street from me, and so I learned a lot about Cajun music and from him. And then there happened to be this guy that came into the music store that I was working in one day to buy I believe he bought a guitar for his wife, and his name is Ricky Reese, and he's from the Lafayette area. Used to have a band called the Gin and Tonics here. And Ricky turned me on to Bob Wills and the Texas Playboys. Joel knew about was kind of turned me on to Django Reinhardt too, so that was kind of the beginning of the Red Stick Ramblers.
Okay.
And
but I'm going to back up.
Did
you ever take lessons, like when you were young, either, or are you pretty much self-taught?
I'm self-taught mostly. I don't know what my problem is, but I'm very I'm too stubborn to take lessons.
Yeah.
You know, you start playing something and you just kind of develop your own bad habits, and then at that point it's sometimes too late to go back and change what you've been doing. So
would you study players though?
I would. Every time to this day, whenever I go see a show, I'll sit on the side where I can see what the drummer's doing, and I've learned a lot just by doing that. I would definitely I learned by the time I was 18, I knew all the Led Zeppelin songs. Like, I could play every lick that John Bonham could play, of course.
Yeah.
You know? And then would go and see this guy, Herman Jackson, who is now, I think he's the head of the jazz department, or he was at one time head of the jazz department at Southern University.
Okay.
After Alvin Batiste was there. And living in Baton Rouge at that time, which was the late 90s, we had in Baton Rouge at one time, we had Donald Edwards, Wes Anderson, and Roland Garin, which I don't know to any of you jazz nerds out there, I think Wes and Roland Garin both went through the Lincoln Jazz Center at one time, and Wes Anderson's one of the most amazing alto saxophone players alive.
Yeah.
And all three of those guys were going to Southern at the same time, and you could go to a place downtown called M's Fine and Mellow and watch those guys with Ellis Marsalis, and sometimes Jason Marsalis would come, and it was great.
Boy, very nice.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah. You know, because, you know, I always think of with the drummers – you know, with with that, you always talk about the rhythm section.
Right.
You've got to really click with whoever's playing that bass. I mean, the whole band.
Yeah.
But that's something as a drummer you really need to click with.
Yeah, there's a special bond between a bass player and or a drummer and his bass player. That's for sure.
It was interesting you talk about the Red Stick Ramblers. I was watching rewatching a video that you had done with the current band, the Revelers, and Eric Fry.
Oh yeah,
the bass player. He talks about that.
Yeah,
you know about that relationship.
Yeah, Eric is basically I'd be lost without him these days. He's my right arm. You know. I love that guy. And it's getting to the point now where we don't even have to. We don't even have to talk anymore about what we're going to do. It just happens, you know.
And,
you know, for whatever it's worth. But it's just he makes it very easy, and I lean on him every night.
Yeah, very nice. So the Red Sticker, you met those guys, and how did it come about in terms of starting this band, the Red Stick Ramblers?
Well,
because that was a big deal around here back then. I mean, and I know
nice
in Baton Rouge, but around here, well, you know, I was selling music at that time, so you know, there's certain things that really stick out in my brain when different bands or different styles really came into the area, and not that people didn't know about some of those styles, but that band was
Well, that band was, you know, like I said, we all sort of lived in that same neighborhood and traveled in the same circles. It was sort of born out of just going to Joel's house and playing music. You know, Richard Burgess was around, who's a person who lives here, and he's a great, amazing musician.
That's Anya's husband.
AKA Anya's husband.
I'm kidding, Richard.
That's right.
Because it used to kind of go the other way.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. So
it happens. It happens. Yeah. Happens to the best of us.
Yeah.
Richard, so, you know, and I've always looked up to Richard's musical knowledge and sense of, you know, taste and history and stuff. So Richard was there, Joel, Lindsay, Chaz Justice, Ricky Reese, Josh Caffrey, and then what was his last name? Fontenot used to come by. Christy Guillory used to show up.
Mm-hmm.
This was all back in the, the late 90s. And it's just kind of that band kind of just got born out of a jam session over at Joel's house. And then we started playing. I think those guys would go play in the quad at LSU.
Yeah.
And
then
we started playing at one of the local bars. I remember we had a band called this is just a quick story, but I won't name names. But the original bass player, not Ricky, for a band that the Red Stick Ramblers kind of grew out of, fell asleep one night on the bandstand, and it happens, you know.
Yeah.
I guess he had been studying very hard. So after that, that was kind of the end of that band, and quick, you know. And then we started this. We kind of went out, and we had to, as the Red Stick Ramblers, but we hadn't come up with a name yet, so we just kind of threw something at the wall that stuck, and we went out, and the rest is history, I guess. We had our first gig at a little coffee shop in Mandeville, Louisiana, and then we started playing Chelsea's in Baton Rouge, which at the time was where a lot of young bands would get their start.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. And was there discussion at that time amongst all of you that where – like what direction we wanted this band to go in? Or did it just...
I don't know if that band ever had any direction. We just played music we liked, you know? And it all, somehow to us, in our brains, it seemed to work. No, I don't, I think later on as we sort of got further on in our career, I think record companies and people who considered themselves in the profession of selling music didn't really know what to make of us or do with us. And even, you know, I felt like, too, even some folks around here, around Acadiana, didn't really know what to do with us either because we didn't have an accordion.
That's right.
You know, we would go from a French tune, from France, you know, like a Django song or something or a ballad and then play a Dennis McGee song or something. And then we'd play a Bob Wills song. And I think, some people really liked it. And then some people were like, well, what am I supposed to do with this?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
But we were just having fun.
There was a look to the band, though, too.
Oh, yes. Back in the day before we got all lazy and stopped wearing.
Yeah.
Yeah, suits.
But, I mean, it was – I just remember seeing you guys at the – you know, in the earlier – there was quite – and that look stayed. I mean, there was a good look to that band.
Yeah, it stuck around for a while.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, listen, we're going to take a short break here, and we're going to go back to – you were talking about Belton Richard.
Yeah.
And this is actually the song that you first heard.
Yep.
All right. Richard, if you just joined us, this is The Exchange on KRVS 88.7 FM or on the web at krvs.org. Now's a great time to check out the website because we do have our annual fundraiser coming up, which will run October 18th through the 27th, and it is a secure website, so you can renew your membership, or if you've never been a member, please click on the website and you can read all about it. Safe, secure website. You can do your pledge right online. Or you can also call the station too. That's 337-482-5787. And as I said at the beginning, I always encourage people to, even if you have already renewed your membership, to stop in the station between October 18th and 27th because it's a great time just to see everything going on here. If you've never seen the station, to get a little tour and meet the folks that are here full-time, and then some of your part-time producers that are here also. My guest in the studio today, Glenn Fields, is a musician currently with the band The Revelers. We've been talking about his history with the Red Stick Ramblers, but also one of the founders of the Black Pot Festival, which is coming up very soon, October 25th and 26th. That will be at Acadian Village, but prior, there will be the Black Pot Camp. So if you want to go learn styles of music, I know there's culinary classes there. That is at Lakeview Park in Eunice, October 20th through the 24th. That's how many years now with the camp?
I believe this is the third year for the camp.
Okay. The website also is www.blackpotfestival.com.
That's great.
All right. We're talking about the Red Stick Ramblers. You're touring around with them. I'm curious with the festival, with the Black Pot Festival, because if I and I may be remembering this incorrectly, but the idea for the festival came from things that you were experiencing out on tour?
Yeah, a couple of different things. Well, we were, I think Chaz and I were bemoaning the fact that we weren't getting the a certain headlining slot at a certain festival. I don't even remember what we were talking about exactly, but we were having a chat with our friend Jay Unger, who is a well-known folk musician and has been hiring us to play at a music camp up in upstate New York for many years called Ashokan Fiddle and Dance. And Jay said, you know, the best way to headline a festival is to start your own. And so he dared us to start a festival. Literally said, I dare you to start this festival. So we got on the phone and we started calling people and asking them just as a favor if they would if we put this together, would they play for whatever we could raise at the door?
Yeah.
And every one of them said yes. And it was great. And it's really been a wonderful experience. And I never in a million years thought that I would be doing something like this 8 years later.
Yeah.
And I've actually found out that I enjoy putting stuff like this together. It's
interesting.
Fun.
Interesting, yeah. So the thought of putting together this style of festival, mm-hmm. can you, for people that haven't been to it, can you just kind of describe the type of festival
is? Well, we have incorporated elements from many festivals that we used to play and still play as a band. And one of the things that we enjoyed from some of the festivals that we'd been to is the element of camping overnight, where you have a chance to meet fellow musicians or like-minded folks who are really into music and share what you know. And at this festival, I think it's a unique experience to share a tune, you know, whether it's a song from here in our neck of the woods with someone who comes from another part of the country who might have a song that they want to share with you.
Yeah.
And so it's a nice chance for some cross-pollinization. If you're a musician, you know, we're all on a never-ending quest for the next style or song or whatever it is that's going to get us excited. So there's this chance to do that. And then there's also a chance to learn a little bit about cooking, because there's a strong cooking element to the festival and a food element. So a lot of people share what they know in the campground, and they're cooking food for their friends or for the contest on Saturday. We really felt strongly that we would like to incorporate that here, because I don't know of any other festival in Louisiana that does such a thing. I love our festivals here, but I do think this is a chance to get to, you know, meet folks on a different level.
Well, you know what's interesting with Black Pot is how many people that I have talked to that don't leave the camping area because they're so – I mean, there's some pretty intensive jammers out there.
Absolutely.
And, you know, people come and whether they have the intentions of going to listen to some of the of the musicians brought in, they don't, because all of a sudden they met so-and-so from somewhere and they don't leave and they play through the night.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. There's some great people that come to the festival that come every year that are just amazing musicians, and that's all they want to do is play music. And
well, you know, it's,
people play music.
The other thing that's cool about it, because I really like this festival, is that I always tell people, too, just to take some time to go walk through that camping area, because
absolutely.
Within even 10 minutes, you will hear so many different – well, different songs, but you'll hear so many different styles being played and different and different instruments.
Yeah, it's true.
You know, that people bring in.
Yeah, we've been, you know, really lucky to have a great group of folks that come out every year. Everybody's really friendly, and they're more than happy to share what they know.
That's right. Well, we're going to come back to the Black Pot, but let's go back to music for a minute. You playing from the Red Stick. Now you have gone to the Revelers.
That's right.
And that band, some of the players came out of the Red Stick Ramblers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that band is you, Eric Fry. You have Daniel Kulik in that band, Blake Miller. And who am I missing? Chaz.
Chaz Justice.
Sorry,
yeah,
Chaz.
How could you forget Chaz?
The Revelers have been together for how long?
The Revelers That's a good question. I guess about 3 years now in one form or another.
That's it, huh?
Yeah,
wow.
That's it. Just a little while. Chaz and Eric and myself and Chris Stafford had a band called Hungry Hungry, which was sort of our alter ego rock band.
Yeah.
And I feel like this band was sort of born out of that one. But I've been really lucky to meet some amazing musicians over my lifetime. And it's not over yet, but one of the most amazing people I've ever gotten to share the stage with is Kevin Wimmer. And I've been really lucky to have gotten to play with him for 7 years. And hopefully we can play a song that's is The Revelers, which is all the guys you mentioned, plus Kevin and then a friend of Kevin's and ours named Bob Willoughby, who I think just has one of the most amazing voices. And the he's just got this great style of playing music, period, not just jazz, which is what this song is, but
he's a keyboard player.
Yeah, he plays piano, he plays fiddle, he plays guitar.
Oh, he plays everything.
And he does it in his own way.
Yeah.
Which I really enjoy. And I've been really lucky to be around those two when they're playing together. It's just magical.
Did you meet him or see him first at a festival or through Kevin?
I met him through Kevin.
Okay.
Yeah. Through Kevin Wimmer. I think the first time I met Bob, we were playing in Asheville, and Kevin wanted to introduce us to Bob. So we went over to someone's house who he was house-sitting for, and there happened to be a piano in the house. And so we played the first song we played that I remember was Jitterbug Waltz, which is a Fats Waller tune, but I had only ever heard the Rashawn Rolling Kirk version. That's another nerdy jazz name. But it was a lot of fun, and Bob kind of does his own thing.
You brought in a cut today.
I did.
Tell us about
this is from a little recording session that we did over at Chris Stafford's studio, Staffland Studios. Hey Chris. I guess 2 years ago, and it was all those fellows, as me, Eric, Chaz, Bob Willoughby, Kevin Wimmer, and Daniel Kulik on rhythm guitar. And we recorded about 30 tunes, and don't know if they'll ever see the light of day, but I wanted to bring one in just so that we could maybe send it out to the universe.
There you go. Yeah. This is Mood Indigo. All right.
Yeah. One, two, two. The one, two, three, four. Till you've had that mood and you go, that feeling goes stealing down to my shoe while I sit and cry. Go along, always get that mood and it go since my baby said goodbye. In the evening when lights are low, I'm so lonesome I could cry. Cause there ain't nobody cares about me. I'm just as blue as any man can be. Cause when I get that mood and it go, I could lay me down. Thank you. my baby say goodbye. In the evening when lights are low, I'm so lonesome I could cry. 'Cause there ain't nobody who cares about me. I'm just as blue as any man can be. When I get that mood and it goes, I can lay me down and die.
Very nice. That was Mood Indigo, and that was with the guys from the Revelers, Chaz Justice, Eric Fry, Daniel Kulig, Blake Miller, my guest in the studio today, Glenn Fields, along with Bob Willoughby and Kevin Wimmer. That was absolutely beautiful.
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's got a voice.
Oh, he's amazing. Yeah.
Very nice. Yeah. And then, you know,
all those guys are.
And then Kevin, I mean, Kevin's just scary.
Talented, yeah.
You know? But, you know, you think about with all the traveling that you have done, you know, in the bands you're with, boy, how many musicians, I mean, really, really talented folks are out there that a lot of people don't know about.
Yeah.
You know?
It's amazing. And I don't know. You just never know where you're going to end up, but I've just been really lucky to meet some amazing people.
That's right. Yeah. Well, we need to hear some more of that. So you guys need to see what you can do with that.
Yeah, well, you know, Chaz put that whole session together.
Chaz, get that going, man.
Yeah. Twist his arm, Cheryl.
We're calling you out on the studio, on the radio. Get that going.
Yeah, he did a good job of getting everybody in there and getting it recorded. And we did it all in 3 days. We did everything live. There's no overdubs or anything. And, he only Chaz could do something like that.
Yeah, beautiful. So. Well, what can – we're winding down here a bit. What can people expect to do at the camp?
Well, the camp is – it's basically 3 days of sort of, you know, loose classes. But it's – there's classes – from everything from, like, you know, cooking classes that you mentioned earlier, but you mentioned the music classes. But the music classes kind of run the gamut, everything from Cajun fiddling to Appalachian clogging to jazz guitar to country harmony singing. It's really an eclectic mix of things that we love about the music that we've been playing and the music that we've been hearing over the last, I think the band, the Red Stick Ramblers, started 15 years ago.
So, golly, yeah, boy.
That's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it's an excuse to have our friends come to Acadiana and share what they know with the people that we love here.
Because you've brought instructors in for
– Yeah, that's right. That's right.
There's local folks teaching, local folks. But also –
Yeah, Al Berard's going to be there this year.
Scary talented.
Yeah. Blake Miller's always there.
Scary talented.
Yeah. But then we also have Tom Mitchell. Bob may show up.
Tom Mitchell plays guitar.
Tom Mitchell is a guitar player from the Baltimore area that played with Dan Hicks and the Hot Licks for
which
many
I've noticed
years.
At Black Pot, a lot of guitar players really move up to the front of the stage when he's up there.
Yeah. Tom's another one of those scary talented people. Yeah. Yes, he is.
Yeah. So I mean it's going to be a nice variety of classes out there, but also, you know, a nice variety of folks instructing and passing on what they know.
Absolutely.
And then you've got Black Pot curing. You've got Toby Rodriguez out there doing some things with you guys.
Yeah.
Not to be confused with Black Pot curling.
Right, which you mentioned earlier, which sounds like fun. I think next year we're going to add that to the
get
curriculum.
Get a little ice rink and add that.
Yeah, we'll freeze over the lake at Lakeview and get some push brooms. It'll be a lot of fun. Drink some beer.
So there's everything from dance to playing music to culinary, all kinds of things.
Yeah, and we'll have a dance view. Oh, I'm sorry. We'll have a dance every night at the camp. It's all out at Lakeview RV Park on Highway 13 between Eunice and Mamou, and it starts on Sunday.
And that's October 20th through the 24th. Then we go right into the next event, which is the actual Black Pot Festival. And that starts on Friday night, the 25th. You kick it off with Corey Ledet's playing.
That's right.
Yep. Lil Pop's going to be out there. J.P. Harris, the Swayback Sisters. And you guys are going to – are you closing out the night?
No, the Revelers are going to play, and then the Pine Leaf Boys.
Oh, yeah, the Pine Leaf Boys. They close it. That's kind of kind of a...
Every year.
Right?
The first year we had it, Wilson was one of the first people to get on board and without hesitation. And it's, you know, he's another just friend that I'll probably know the rest of my life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And scary talented.
Yeah, and scary talented, right. Just like the rest
you
of them.
You have a lot of talented friends.
Well, I've got to make up, you know, for my own lack of talent.
Let's mention, too, though, what goes out at the Black Pop. You said you've got the folks out there jamming in the camping area there. But there's also – you've got the main stage. You have the culinary end of that with the Black Pot Cook-Off. But then there's also – you've got some of the smaller, more intimate workshops and presentations that go on, too.
This year – we don't really usually do a whole lot of workshops, but this year we're Josh Caffrey, old friend of ours. I think he's got his doctorate, a PhD in folklore studies.
Yeah.
He wrote a book about some of the Lomax recordings that were done here in Louisiana, and LSU Press picked it up, and they're publishing it. So this year he's going to come to Black Pot and give a talk and a book signing and just talk about some of those recordings. He recently was awarded a fellowship award to go to the National Archives and study some more of those recordings and transcribe them and do stuff like that. So hey, Josh, wherever you may be out in the world.
He'll be here soon.
Yeah.
I always like it, too, in the – are you using the church out there again this year?
Yes, we are. I always tell people –
It's a beautiful setting.
Oh, if I had the money to exactly duplicate that building, I would, and I'd put it in my backyard, and I would just sit in there every day and listen to silence. It's the most beautiful-sounding building in the world.
It is.
And we're lucky enough to have some really amazing musicians who come down and put on very intimate performances for a select group of people who can manage to squeeze themselves into that
That's
building.
That's right. And people will stand outside the windows, outside the back door.
Yeah.
And very nice.
Just to get a taste.
Saturday then, who are there some new folks that you've brought in this year that are these people that you tend to meet on the road?
Generally, yeah. Generally speaking, these are personal friends of ours that we meet out on the road.
Because tell me about the Swayback Sisters.
The Swayback Sisters... Swayback Sisters is Carrie Fridley's band from Asheville. It's herself and two other ladies, and they sing real tight three-part harmonies and do everything from sort of country soul to gospel to old-time Appalachian music.
Oh, very nice. Yeah. And on Saturday, I mean, there's stuff going on all day, and it starts at 1 o'clock?
I believe it starts a little earlier with the square dance.
I'm sorry. The square dance is from 11:30 to 1.
Right.
Are you doing a contra or a square dance out at the camp too?
I think there's a square dance out at the camp as well.
I'm
not sure
told
what. I'm sure, not sure what night of the week that is.
So everything starts at 11:30, and of course it ends up with the Red Stick Ramblers each year close that out.
That's right.
But before that. I know this is one that a lot of – you got Little Freddie King back, which is fabulous.
Yes.
Just for his
those guys.
Just for his clothes alone. but then you've got Los Texas Maniacs featuring – they're bringing in Augie Myers and Flaco Jimenez.
Yes. Yeah, we're really excited about that. They played last year, and generally I try not to have the same big bands every year. But they contacted me again this year. They said, we love the festival. We want to come back. I said, well, I'm sorry. You know, you guys were here last year. Maybe we can do it again in 2014. And they said, well, how about if we could bring Flaco Jimenez and Augie Meyer? And I said, sold.
So,
they're coming back, and they're bringing some even bigger guns with them. I'm really excited to have those guys here. They are the surviving members of one of my favorite bands when I was younger called the Texas Tornadoes.
Yeah.
And I think we have a song.
Yeah, we're going to go out.
Then.
Yeah, we'll go out with
we'll
them.
Go out with that? Okay.
So, everybody, Black Pot Camp will be the 20th through the – I brought in too many sheets. Will be the 20th through the 24th, then Black Pot Festival 25th, 26th. BlackPotFestival.com is where you can find out the schedule and everything going on. Very laid back, really cool time out there. Come say hi to me at the – entrance booth.
Yeah, Cheryl, thank
you. It's a good time.
Thank you for volunteering.
There's a lot of people that do, and it's fun. You know,
it is,
you get to,
it is a lot of fun.
Get to see a lot of people.
Yeah.
So, Glenn Fields, have a great week.
Yeah.
It's going to be a nice, successful festival.
Say hi to Blake for me.
I will do that. And again, our KRVS annual fundraiser, October 18th through the 27th. We're going to go out with the Texas Tornadoes.
1, 2, 3, 4. Woo-hoo-yah! when was